Yo, we're back. This is Michael Amos. This is the Californication 2020 podcast. Whoa, dude, Esther, put a ring on it, man. Esther, little Esther Pavitsky, put a ring on it.
Still trying. I still send her letters every day and emails in violation of the restraining order.
Season 1, Episode 7, Girls Interrupted. Girls Interrupted.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for me, I don't really understand that because you'd have to start before you interrupt something. So, but I get it. You know, who's been interrupted, right?
So, it's been a long time. We're still in quarantine. You been on any dates? You have any? What are your most memorable dates?
I feel like you have a story to tell me that's gonna be way better.
Nothing. We'll see.
I've never been on a date. So you want me to make one up? So, okay. You want me to tell you about my absolute ultimate failures?
Sure.
These are just sad though. I mean, they're not funny. Like, I'm pretty sure I have had more girls back at my place leave extremely disgusted and angry than any guy who's ever lived, at least percentage wise. It's pretty bad.
Well, you set the precedence too high. You're like, I'll take you back to the future, and then
yeah,
it just doesn't happen.
No, what happens is they realize eventually when the alcohol wears off that I'm really not Michael J. Fox, right? And then they come in, they realize they're in like a 300 square foot, rat hole of an apartment, and they just, you know, it's really just kills the mood. Right, like I do have a better chance bringing them to the bathroom at Wendy's. So, but yeah, worst date. You know, this I don't have a great story, Wayne. I hope you have a really good story to tell us because I feel like this is gonna be disappointing. But I went on a date with a Ukrainian girl one time, and she started talking about the right off the bat. She started talking about how she had this whole plan for marriage, right? It was like, you know, she had this whole thing laid out for like how her life was gonna look and how her marriage was gonna look, and she was like asking me within 5 minutes of meeting me like how I felt about marriage and things like that. And you know, I kept trying to deflect from the conversation. And look, you know me, right? You know I'm completely desperate, and I also you actually know for sure that I have no standards, right? Stories we can't tell. You know,
No. Esther's listening to this. You have very high standards. She's the one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, listen, a couple of things. I can say this stuff right now because Esther's not listening, nor is any girl ever listening. And if they
She's going to listen, and she's going to be like, this guy's handsome, this guy's funny. If my current relationship doesn't work out, I'm, J.K. Ruffling. Send a
okay,
message.
I will send her that. I will send her that email from another account that she hasn't blocked yet. Later tonight, after we finish with the show.
Shout out to blockers.
But what I would say, the most likely situation where she sees this episode is if her lawyer tells her that I'm talking about her again on the air. So I think that's probably the only reason she's going to watch, so that she can add it to the, you know, restraining order and, you know, bring it into the. It's just, you know, stuff is a big mess.
She just wants you to try harder.
Well, that's the way I see it. They're always putting out challenges. They always just want to see if you're really committed. You know, and honestly, that's what this Ukrainian girl was like. She really wanted to see how committed you were right off the bat. And I do think I'm very optimistic, overly optimistic based on my history, but I never give up. I'm very optimistic that she would have gone home with me. This was maybe the only person in my entire life that I have actually just rejected. Like, this is the only time, you know, I tell myself all of the other times where I rejected them, but I know in my heart of heart it's not true. But in this case, it actually was. Like, I really think I could have made something happen with this girl. She was, you know, but I was just like, I can't deal with this. I don't want this in my life. You know, I don't want anybody who's actually going to be committed in my life. That sounds absolutely horrible. I turn down even Ukrainian girls if they start talking about marriage. Yeah. Which, you know, is probably why I like this show so much, somehow, on some level. Would you settle down for Karen?
Dude, Karen's awesome.
Really?
If she would give me a chance, I would put a ring on Karen.
Yeah, well, pretend.
I would top Becca for sure. She's like the cutest kid.
She's like, what is she, 12 in the show? All right, Wayne.
I guess.
Wayne,
I really
like
her character. I like her character.
Yeah. Well, it's all about character. You know, like when it comes to, you know, when it comes to women, that's the way we judge them, is on character alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what about you? You have a bad date?
Yeah.
Hit it.
The only dates I've been on are when I'm the third wheel, so they're all bad.
Hey man, I can definitely appreciate that. Oh, okay. All right. I have a good story. This is a third wheel date. Hmm. This is a third wheel date. So back in graduate school, I was extremely unskilled, and this girl very clearly liked me, but she was also pretty. She also had a lot of people interested in her, and you know, I didn't like. I mean, I'm kind of like an inexperienced guy. I didn't do like the right things and like jump at the right time. So a lot of times I need, you know, too many signals to actually get the hint. And by that time it's too late and things like that. And so I finally did like manage to agree to go out with this girl. And I was on campus late, I think, for a class or something like that. And she lived very nearby. And she said, oh, you know, I'll come pick you up and I'll take you on the date. Cool, right? Girl makes me wait 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. And of course, like the chump I am, I'm just waiting. You know, she was like giving me texts. She was like, you know, sorry, I'm running late, I'm on my way, blah, blah, blah. You know, like the chump I am, I'm just sitting there waiting, just standing there, just standing outside, you know, like, okay, well, I'll just wait forever for this girl. She shows up. She is in the car, as is some like 6 foot tall, you know, like super hot, incredibly smart French dude.
You know? I'm not French.
Right. Well, you had the costume on that day.
Yeah.
And
anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No. So I get in the car, right? So like, and of course, I'm like a really stupid guy at this point. Like, I still. Like, I don't immediately realize what's happening, you know? And then not only that, we stop and pick up some other guy who is very obviously this girl's puppy dog. Like, he is very obviously this fourth guy now. So I'm like the third wheel. There's now a fourth wheel with us, right? And I guess she's pretending like this is just like gather around ye friends. We're going out to have fun. But it's her creating this collection of guys who worship her, right? Yeah. And the guy she really liked was the French guy. They're now married. They have two kids.
Oh, well, congrats.
And then the other guys that she was using, right, were me and the fourth guy. Now, to my credit, much of my willing to go along with this was based on really more of being like, of being just completely ignorant, more so than being like a complete doormat. Right. And I guess maybe that's not a fair distinction to make, but like, I feel like a real doormat would have just waited because he was like, oh, well, you know, this girl can treat me like really poorly. Like, I was just really stupid. I didn't realize how poorly she was treating me at the start. Right. I figured it out pretty quickly, though. Like, I figured out what was happening. You know, we drove in the car to some, you know, and all, of course, all this is like a test, right, to see how you'll react to this kind of stuff and things like that. And we drove to some bar and I checked out like within 10 minutes. I actually left and I had to walk. I mean, I lived in Santa Monica. I had to walk a pretty good distance home. This was pre-Uber, so I could have taken a cab. I could have figured out how to take the bus, but it was kind of a pain. And like, it was, again, it was like 2005, like cell phones weren't as amazing as they are now. So it wasn't nearly as easy with the information. So I just hoofed it, man. I walked like an hour and a half home or something like that from some bar. And I don't even remember where. I think the bar was on your side of Santa Monica. And where I lived was on the other side of Santa Monica, like over by like Lincoln and Ocean. And on the Hank Moody side, close to Venice, really. So it was an awful experience, but it was a good learning experience. It taught me a lot. I was pretty devastated because I didn't have too many girls that were interested in me, or maybe I did and I just didn't realize they were interested in me. This one definitely was, and I had messed it up long before this point. So, at by this point she wasn't anymore. Such is life. So such is how it goes. So that was really, really awful and embarrassing. And, I mean, I hate that. I hate that girls put you in those situations, but, it's your job not to get in those situations because they will all try to put you there. Shrug. Everybody's playing for ego points, man.
And shout out to Joe Kim for subscribing 99 cents. Thank you for the donation.
Thank you, girl fan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He's friends, not girlfriend. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. So, Hank is with Becca, busting out a little Robert Frost. Nothing good ever lasts.
Yeah.
And like Hank and Karen, or so we think. I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
It's not
Well,
that.
that's what's informing Becca in the scene for sure. She even says, everything turns to shit like in the end, like you and mom. Like that's
Oh!
yeah, I mean it's true, right? Nothing good ever lasts. I mean we are born, and we are born with the seed inside us that says we will not last forever, and
I mean,
everything is going to end.
that's like a negative romanticized way of saying it. I think like nothing good ever lasts is like actually your expectations just get too high and you're always like chasing peak. I mean, we know this
Another good point.
from
You
poker.
adjust to whatever your norm or whatever your new norm is, and it becomes your expectation. And then what happens is you no longer get a dopamine hit,
Yeah,
right?
so
If you
one
start, yeah, it's terrible.
we could like take a step back and just be like, what do I have? How like the Bicycle Hotel Casino has so many waters, so if COVID hits, I'm still got a lot, so.
No, and so here's the thing, right? If you suppose you were like living near and the only place you could get water was from like a dirty river that where like people were like bathing cows and like dumping human waste in and things like that, right? That was the only place you could get water from. And then you were given water from like the tap at your home, right?
Then
You
you'd be
would
like,
be you'd be super stoked. You would be like, this is the greatest thing ever, right? But now, because you have snob wa Fiji water, right? And now you are adjusting to water that comes from only the most pure of the springs on Earth,
So they
right?
say.
Yeah, Californication 2020 sponsored by Fiji Water. And so that, but now you just won't get anything out of like if you are just disgusted by having to drink tap water, and you will be
I'm
disappointed.
not. I'm okay. I'm honestly like the reason I have all these Fijis is like more dumb. It's more like out of convenience than out of like addiction to higher quality water.
Well, sure, you have it. Also, in the end, it's not actually higher quality water. It actually is shit water, but
Okay. I mean, whatever. They sold me the brand, so I don't know.
I've been to Fiji. It's a nice place. Yeah,
I
they have
Googled
good.
it. I've Googled
Yeah,
Fiji and seen
you
pictures.
can't drink out of the tap there, but it's a nice place.
So you have a lot of comments on this, like the scene.
Well, I mean, I think actually you just got at it, right? It's a, the poem is a pretty depressing, Robert Frost poem about, every, nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold, her early leaf's a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief, right? I mean, it's like you're in paradise and then you're not, right? It's very, very quick, right? I mean, things flower and then they go back to being, ugly, non-flowering cacti. So dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay, and the poem is really about the end of innocence, right? Like you're a child, right, for only a very brief period of time. That's like when you're a flower, and then eventually you're forced to grow up. And the reality is, Becca is A, at an age where you're forced to grow up, right? We already know she's trying to figure out what's happening with boys in school, but B, she's on the accelerated grown-up path because her parents are, again, not technically, not actually legally divorcing, but they're basically getting a divorce. It's the same psychological situation for Becca, which is a trauma, which has, negative impacts on, her brain, and really is a loss of innocence, and having to force to see that. I mean, she is now what she has come home to see a naked woman who's not her mom in her dad's bed, things like that. So this is tough for her. And this is where she's at, right? This is where her psychology is at. And Hank, you know, Hank doesn't seem to be coping well with the idea that nothing gold can stay, right? He wants things to go back the way they were, right? Hank is trying to MAGA, right? He's trying to make things go back to how they were, or imagining that they were something that they were not, and then wanting to go back to that way. It's tough for him, you know. And Becca, she's obviously struggling to deal with it too, but she seems to be coming to terms with it, I guess.
Well, not at the beginning of the episode. She's like, you know, he's like, are you and Mom gonna get back together? Hank and Karen get right. back together? She's like, yeah, you know, we made out last week, and you know, yeah, playing again second baseman. So
yeah, well, it's gotta be so confusing for her, and in part because her parents are kind of unkind to her. I mean, they give each other all kinds of missed signals, and yeah, you know, Becca's picking up on all of that, and that's really not cool. I mean, their relationship, I don't know, maybe this is what people think of as like an adult relationship between exes, but I think of their relationship as an overly flirtatious, inappropriate relationship between sure. exes.
Oh yeah, it's not good. Like even yeah. this entire,
and I can't imagine, you know, having Bill be the guy that stole your wife from you. I can't imagine like going over to that dude's house all the time without you know, without stabbing him. I mean, like if I'm going over to that dude's house, it's because he's gonna die. You know, like, I mean, that's it, right? I'll wait in the car to pick up Becca when it's my turn, but there's no way I'm going to hanging out with that, you know.
Man, and I thought Robert Frost was cold.
Yeah, no, Robert
Frost cold. Okay,
Frost, I got it. He's really cold, actually. Yeah, it's just really kind of sad.
He's frosty.
Yeah, very much New England, you know, very cold people.
So yeah, Becca's like, you and Mom getting back together. Hank's like, yeah. Becca's like, realistically, you know. And Mike and I are like, Becca, hold on, just
yeah.
relax.
Yeah, he says it's possible, but not realistic. Yeah. Right, so that's
Becca.
That's
hold, good. Wait a couple more orbits. Wait for Aces. Then the dog farts, and then Karen comes in. Hank is like, "Don't tell our daughter not to believe in happy endings or Santa Claus."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Karen's like, "I think she figured out the Santa Claus one by now." Hank is like, "Yeah." You know,
whatever. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to. It's tough. Are you supposed to tell your kids to believe in happy endings or not? What are you supposed to do?
I think it was a good quality, like pre-internet, like post-internet. It's like the fairy tale, and like what's, and you could see what's going on in the world. The discrepancy is just too large.
Like, okay, so there was like an extremely brief period of time in yeah. first world countries between like 1950 and 1990.
That's where exactly was, the okay. time period. 95. 19, yeah, okay. 1950 okay. to 1995, I think it okay. was okay.
Yeah. yeah, because before that, you couldn't tell kids happy endings because half of them were dying of, you know, random diseases and whatnot that were happening, and their like level of suffering was off the charts anyways, so they were forced to deal with reality. Right. Yeah. And, you know, before that, they were getting like, you know, killed and raped in warfare and, you know, all sorts of nonsense. So, yeah, their kids have never really been as innocent. They've never really had the option to be as innocent as they often get represented.
I feel like the films in the 80s and the 90s really echoed that. Like, dude, we got over a couple world wars. You know, we can make this place a good place. And then the internet yeah. comes out. Boom. Globalized. I think it was like, America was like really in a bubble because they came on top of World War II, and just like everybody just got like, you know, America was ahead anyway, but everybody else got reamed down.
Yeah.
So it's
well,
like,
it's funny how that works, because America took over the globe and set up a complete system to extract resources from, you know, every other country and then benefit from that. And then imagine that the world was just this, you know, amazing place for certain groups of Americans, and how easy life was for them. And it's true. You know, for these boomers, they essentially lived through the kind of, you know, all they lived through the benefits of empire, really. And, you know, America setting up a global empire, and now they get to, but this show's made in 2007, so it's not really like that anymore. You know?
Sure, but like, it's still the echoes of, like, it hasn't fully manifested. I mean, this is why we're revisiting this in 2020, because now it's like, things are going down. Like, there's a lot of people unhappy in the world, a lot of, you know, people who can make things happen, and it's like, you know, this castle surrounded by a moat, not that safe anymore.
Yeah, no, it's really not. Speaking of not that safe, Karen said, they talked about making out, and, you know, Hank said, like, it was an accident, which is like the same. This is echoing a conversation he had with Mia earlier, right? Where Mia was like, you know, he said, listen, what happened between us was an accident. And Mila was like, oh yeah, yeah, you just slipped into me, right? And then they echo the same exact thing, right? Karen says, oh, your tongue just slipped into my mouth. It's absolutely echoing that previous conversation that he had with Mia. You know, certainly seems like Hank has a lot of accidents, right, that end up going really badly for him, and maybe despite his best intentions, I don't know, does he always have the best intentions? But like, you know, a lot of
I disagree with some decisions this episode, but yeah. Anyway, I mean, it's arguable, but whatever.
Sure. What do you mean when you say you disagree with decisions? Some of his decisions.
Well, we're gonna get down, you know, through the episode, and then there's okay. some stuff that, like, I get it. It's fiction, and man, Tom Capinos writes the sickest lines, and even the closing line of this episode is just like, woof, like so many levels. I don't okay. even remember how many levels there were, but just like, anyway, we'll get into that portion.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll let
but
you, I'll
this
let you
episode that. For sure is like, I don't necessarily agree with Hank's decision making, but
sure.
It's a TV show. So,
yeah. I mean, and I don't really want to get into this, but I thought this episode actually, as far as moving the story along, was largely superfluous. I didn't think it did a lot yeah. to develop the characters or to teach Hank a lot about anything, and actually was sort of a rehash of a previous episode where he had kind of this heart-to-heart talk with Becca. But as you said to me when I mentioned this to you before the show, you said, well, you have to fill a lot of time, right? Like, if you're making a show, you have to fill a yeah. lot of time. Like, not every single minute can be moving a show. But I have to say, like, you know, when you get one of these, like, universally recognized, like, truly great shows, I mean, when you get one of those, which, you know, I don't know if we could say Californication. Yes, of course, Californication is the best show ever.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, right. But when you get one of those, it does feel like you're almost on the edge of your seat, kind of like almost every minute. Like, every minute is kind of moving the show. It's a different kind of show, though. But this one didn't do a lot for me as far as, you know, expanding the characters or anything like that. Maybe a little bit Charlie and Marcy, but that's mostly the plot kind of had to move with them.
Yeah, definitely this one. But, like, I remember, like, part of it is we're rewatching it, so we're like, ah, oh, I remember how good the show was. But I remember mm-hmm. the first time watching every episode of season one, I'm just like, oh, this is the nuts. But, like,
yeah,
this one
it's a
is,
show,
like,
for sure.
less so. And also, like, you know, we're a bit older, and it's a different era. It's, like, 13 years later.
Dude, we're like Hank Moody's age, man. We should be feeling Hank Moody.
I am Moody.
Right. Yeah. All right. Good job. And you paint, which is really good.
Yeah. I use both.
Yeah, that's good, man. Listen, any skills, you know? I mean, anything you can use to get a job these days.
They're not even skills anymore, man. Like, back in the 90s, like, typing was a skill. Like, making a search on the internet was a skill.
No doubt. Listen, I don't see whatever happened to Mavis Beacon. You know, is she dead? Is that why Mavis Beacon teaches typing? Is she not teaching typing anymore? She must be dead, huh?
What about the psychic Lady Cleo, man?
Oh yeah, she's gone, man. I need to give her a call too. I don't know. Dionne Warwick's still around. Maybe she.
We need to find out what happens in 2020. So Miss Cleo can come back. We need a little insight.
Here's the thing, Miss. I called Miss Cleo many years ago. She gave me a lot of investment tips. I went broke. Just gonna say. You know, I don't know what the basis was for her tips, but I invested all of my money in a company called Miss Cleo's Landline, and it didn't work out for me. So I'm just gonna say, I don't trust Miss Cleo. I don't think she's the real deal.
She did Bitcoin. I think,
yeah, you gotta find somebody who has better certifications as a medium and as a, you know, fortune teller. So the end of this scene, right? I don't know. He says to, as Becca's leaving, he says to her, "Stay gold, Pony Boy," which, you know, I had to kind of look up Pony Boy because, you know, I'm not 100 years old, so I wasn't familiar with it. And also because I was thinking about this, this Joe Biden line where, you know, somebody was kind of, you know, calling him out at a, you know, like kind of a leftist person was attacking him at a talk that he was giving, you know, where people were asking him questions about, you know, what he's going to do about healthcare and things like that. And he said, like, "Listen, you dog face pony soldier." And I guess that's from like a John Wayne movie of some sort. And I was trying to see if that was connected to Pony Boy, but it turns out Pony Boy is a character in the novel, which is also a movie called The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. And it is about a bunch of kind of like hoodlums who live in Oklahoma, and really they are they essentially like they end up like having to kind of kill a guy. It was kind of justified because these guys were attacking them. It's like rival gangs basically, and they end up killing a guy, and then they end up going in and there's a burning church, and they end up going in and saving some children from the burning church. So like they're hailed as heroes, but then they end up having to go to on trial for murder too, and one of them ends up dying because the injury he sustained saving people from the church. And his buddy he tells his buddy as he's dying, like stay gold pony boy. And that's referencing an earlier conversation they had where he said, you're gold when you're a kid. When you're a kid, everything's new, dawn, right? So the line here is really about protecting childhood innocence with the ability to experience wonder. And I think this is a really good setup for this episode, because if you think about what this episode is about, right? If we kind of put off to the side the Charlie and Marcy plot line, but what this episode is about.
The plot line is so key.
What?
No, no, we're not so gonna. Key.
No, that's key to the episode. I'm saying the stay gold thing about the childhood loss of innocence is really important for Mia and for what happens with Mia and Becca in this episode, right? And you know, then the kinds of stuff that's going on, the kinds of stuff that goes on when you're a teenager, to where you are no longer really able to stay gold. We could also say that applies to Charlie, since you know, he is initiated into the world of you know, like sadomasochism, and you know, one could say that you are gold until you have your nipple ripped off, and then you now have lost your innocence. But we'll get there. So, yeah. And there's like four. This is like a 4-minute scene before the credits come into play, which felt like a lot. Right? It feels like most shows are like, you know, 30 seconds, a minute, and then you get the credits. This was actually a 4-minute scene right at the beginning.
California isn't Californication. It's not like most shows. We know this.
No.
This is why we're doing this.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah, it's better until, you know, the middle seasons. Yeah.
Okay, so now we're at the Runkle household, and they're out of soy milk, I guess. And, you know, now it's kinky time. Marcy's, like, into the whips and chains, but she's not into, like, what's this? I guess, was she okay with spanking but not getting peed on?
No, she said she was okay with spanking, but she collapsed in a heap as soon as she took a spanking. So, I mean, I don't buy it.
It's just like you're into. I get it. Like you could be into certain things and not, but it's just like one was like, "Oh, I'm into this," and then there's like the other stuff's ew. It's like, if you're into some things, wouldn't you be like, "Eh, I'm not into the other stuff."
But I think it's okay to have lines, but I think it is very weird, like what you said earlier, where she like wanted to play. She wanted to play somebody whose legs didn't work in a sexual fantasy, and then. She's not okay with being spanked. Like, these don't seem totally consistent.
Right.
But, you know, I guess, yeah, it's okay to have lines. She did say, there was a line here in this scene that says, what is marriage if not an opportunity to mock someone through thick and thin while simultaneously exploring your deepest, darkest sexual desires? I mean, here's the thing. That actually sounds like a pretty good marriage to me because, you know, I've been married, and for the most part, it seems like you got the first part, which is the opportunity to mock someone through thick and thin without the second part. You know, not only do you not get to explore your deepest, darkest sexual desires, you don't get to explore your shallowest ones either. So, I mean,
love and
goes both ways though. Goes both ways. Not blaming anyone for that really. But yeah,
it's you were just Disney-fied, right? You thought it was something, and you know, they got you. The Disney got you.
Listen, as I discussed earlier in the episode, I'm very naive. And very hopeful for the best, and definitely had a romanticized notion of the way that the world worked and the way people are. But now I know it's just about ego points.
That's Shakespeare's fault too. Don't just blame the cartoons. So Runkle's like, why don't we try your fantasies? Marcy's like,
right on.
Yeah, but Marcy said you can't handle this, like Destiny's Child. I don't think you can handle this. And then and she's like, I want to be with another woman. Runkle's like,
and Runkle said, oh, I can handle that.
Yeah.
Sure. That's what he said, right? No, that's not what he said.
He's like, and just like, yeah, have you been with two women before at the same time?
Yeah, once. It wasn't great. I don't know if I want to tell this story, but let me just say that it's not great unless they're cool with it, they know each other, and you use copious amounts of alcohol and drugs. Or at least that's what I've been told. Because the one threesome I've had, it kind of made me not want to participate in threesomes anymore. It's really not my thing. But if a girl suggests it, I'm down. Just saying. If that's your thing, I'm definitely down to give it a go. Here's the thing. They didn't really like each other that much. So if that's really important. You gotta have people who are cool with each other.
I mean, the only time I've been with two women are when I was dealt pocket queens in poker.
As you know, it's always a losing hand. Something you want to repeat that often.
Yeah. Marcy's then like, I would like to include you too with the, you know, girl on girl. And then and then now Runkle's with Hank and he's like, dude, I got my get out of free jail card. This is like, you know, this is gonna work. It's Runkle, Marcy, Danny, California, and like this will alleviate all the guilt. Hank's like, you want to alleviate guilt? Why don't you just like adopt an African kid?
Yeah, I don't know about these. I mean, that does seem to be something. It's weird because this is going to be a really hot take. But, you know, I think about the coming new Supreme Court justice and, you know, like adopting children out of third world countries is a hugely problematic topic. And it definitely is done by many people in the thoughts that they're doing a good thing. But I'm going to leave this one alone. But needless to say, I don't know about adopting an African baby. That's there's a whole lot of judgment and feeling of superiority that goes into that.
Too real.
Yeah, I should shut up.
This leads into.
You could also buy a beach house. He says you could buy a beach house instead. That's another way to save a marriage. That seems like a better way to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want to adopt anyone because I don't want to take care of any kids.
You know, I think the adopt a kid was to alleviate guilt, but.
It does. Listen, tons of people have kids to keep their relationships going. It's one of the really standard ways that people try to mend, you know, when what they should really be doing is breaking up. But instead, what they do is try to create this thing that bonds them, that artificial. Brings them together. Yeah. And it does for a while. But what eventually happens is they end up, you know, ruining that kid, too, by their own, you know, poor relationship. So, yeah.
So, this was a lead-in because Todd Carr, who directed Crazy Little Thing Called Love, is going to option Hank's blog for a TV series, I guess. And
weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the show, obviously, and a lot of it, like the scene, was obviously set up for the end part of the scene.
But sure, but let me say this about Carr, right? And this is something. This scene reminded me a lot of the scene with Hank and the lawyer from the very first episode. You know, the scene where he just rips her apart.
Oh, right? Meredith.
Like, Meredith. And it's another scene where Hank is with Charlie, and Charlie is trying to hook Hank up with something that I think is good, and Hank just can't accept that, right? Like, if things are not exactly on his terms, Hank is willing to go to the nth degree to kill it. I just want to point out, like, how professional really are all of these people around Hank? Like, Bill maintains a professional relationship with Hank, right? And, like, hiring him to blog him. Carr, who is, you know, who's Hank sleeps with his wife, and then they get into a fight, right? At a bookstore, they seem to hate each other, and Carr is still like, listen, I'm a professional, I'll do this, right? Like, he's going to come in and he's going to auction the blog. Like, it seems preposterous. Seems like these guys would hate each other. But Hank, he knows a ton of, like, really professional, mature people, and he's not that. He's not professional, and he's not particularly mature, and this scene is ridiculous.
Yeah, and just, like, we kind of, because he's the main character, and there are a lot of qualities that we empathize with Hank. So I guess definitely when I was younger, I'd really let it slide. I guess now that I'm older, I'm just like, dude, like, I do believe some of this is, like, valid if you're principled enough or it with your piece of work. You don't have to,
right?
Like, give it up. So I think this.
I mean, his principle here is this guy made a shitty movie. Right, this guy made a shitty movie out of my book, so that makes a lot of sense for why you would
be upset
for why you would not want to work with him again as far as auctioning optioning the blog. Find somebody else to do it with, right? If there's material there, then maybe somebody else who's a maybe you can call Soderbergh back up and maybe he'll do it, you know, since he didn't do the movie. right? Or whatever. Who knows? So, yeah, I guess there's a
shout out
but...
to Antoine Fuqua. But...
Yeah, Antoine Fuqua gets a nice call, gets a nice shout out, right? He's not returning Carr's calls because Carr is not authentic enough after he makes crappy movies with Tom Cruise.
But they're both directors. Like, why would they call each other? I don't
know, well, because they're black actors, like Wayne Brady and Dave Chappelle, right? Like black actors got to stick together.
Right,
so black directors got to stick
but
together.
But that's actors. Actors, you can put multiple actors in the thing. Two directors, they have two different visions. I don't know.
How many black directors are there? Not many. Right, you gotta stick together. So,
I know, whatever. Todd Carr is a 3-picture deal at Paramount, and they get a little Hank and Carr get a little edgy, and then they're like, "Oh, you gotta support your baby mom." Well, I got that too. And then Runkle's like, "Hey, we got some common ground. We're all doing this for money."
Super agent doing a great job. Doing a great job here.
And then they get it on a little more, and then Todd's like, why I want to work with you, because, Hank, this is what's you're what's missing in this world, like some goddamn vision.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, it's really tough for me not to like Carr. I don't really know how badly he butchered this book into this movie. Obviously, we can't really know how bad it was. We know what Hank's opinion is. Right, we know what some people's opinion is, but other people like the movie, right? So who knows?
So
but,
who likes and dislikes the movie is very it's very symbolic to who likes Hank on the inside. Like Mia said, the movie's bad, so Mia feels like she likes this person plus this piece of work, not that piece of work.
Right,
likes the book piece of work, but not the movie work.
Right. No, I think we're supposed to. I mean, I think we're supposed to identify that because we're supposed to identify with that because we're supposed to identify with Hank. And I do think there's a through line of like the people who say they like the movie, right? Like, I think, I don't know. They just get like Hank. Just he thinks they're idiots basically when they like the movie. So yeah, it definitely like those are the characters. Those characters are supposed to have a little bit more depth. In a conflict between a book and a movie. Right, it's like if you're a real intellectual, you're supposed to side with like the book, right? Like the book is always better than the movie.
I don't even agree with that. Yeah, I mean, like I get it. Like I think movies have really improved over time, and this is the thing. Like the craft of writing has had centuries more practice than film. Mm-hmm. Like writing goes back all the way and has been developed. Like film is like a very new. It's like just about one century old.
It's just completely different.
It's a completely different medium. Like, TV shows roughly half an hour now, or movies 2 hours. There's exceptions, but there's like a framework, and then like only in the and even in the last like 20 years, I feel like films just like really just improved up their game, whether it's technology, their delivery. I definitely don't agree. Like the older films are better. I think like the newer stuff's like.
No, man. I think Birth of a Nation was probably the best movie ever made.
I don't know it.
Super racist movie that was a very very early film, silent film in the U.S. KKK movie. I believe it was filmed at the White House. Cheers.
Boom.
That's actually true. Not the current White House. Like in its day, I believe they did a filming of it at the White House. Like that's, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some serious infatuation from Todd Carr's end to our dude Hank Moody.
Yeah, Todd Carr. Maybe he's like an abused spouse at this point. Like the more abuse invective Hank hurls at him, the more he's just desperate to try and get Hank's attention. But he doesn't seem like it, honestly. Nah. He just seems like I see this guy as so professional. Like it's got to be such a pain in the ass to work with Hank. Like he's just got to be like the worst person to work with, trying to adapt more work of his. There's no way as a director I'd want to do that. But I guess whatever.
Yeah, it's just a show.
Listen, stuff happens in real life, man. Sometimes a lot of time has to pass before it can happen. But like you definitely have these things where people come back together. Actors who hate each other, actor who hates a director, and then comes back to work with the same director 20 years later, things like that.
Sure.
So.
There's
know,
also
like Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, right? They hate each other for, you know, 25 years, but then they have a touching conversation while one of them is, you know, dying of, you know, horrific illness. It's very touching.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that people don't wait till those moments to have those conversations.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The way I see it, why even have a conversation at that moment? You know? Like, what's the point? You got to tell somebody, hey, I'm sorry for the last 20 years right before they die? Like, they're about to die. It don't matter.
I think I still think it matters. I think some people, I mean, I would like to make peace with, like, a lot of things before.
Then do it now.
No, I'm in the process. There's a lot of damage. I'm trying to work things out one by one.
Can you elucidate on this? Are you going to ever apologize to me for holding up with the aces over kings?
No.
No, that's not even on your radar. Amazing. No. You going to apologize to me for sucking out with the pocket tens when I had the queens? No?
No.
No apologies. Great.
No. This podcast is the apology.
That's what happened. I feel like Hank and Carr right now. wait, so you made me do work as your apology? You don't know me at all, do you?
I gave you fame, which will lead you to little Esther.
Right.
And living happily ever after.
But you know, if I actually got famous, I would never talk to you again because that's just the kind of person I am. Like, I leave the people who built me up behind.
That's fine. I mean,
that's okay.
You know, the best part of my day is when I go and I ask you to Zoom and you're not there because you moved on to better things. And
yeah. Oh, I get it. That's a movie. That's a movie with that dude from Rounders. Yeah.
Yes, it's Good Will Hunting. It's been out.
Yeah, yeah. The dude from Rounders is in that. He plays like a dumb janitor.
Yeah. Anyway, Runkel gets to his office, and Marcy and Danny are already there, and they're ready for, you know, totally ready for a threesome.
Well, I mean, think about it, though. This is a disaster for Charlie. Charlie never, ever, ever wants to see Marcy and Danny in the same room together because that means that they could be saying who knows what, and he has secrets he needs to keep from Marcy. So there's been all sorts of kind of ways where I almost feel like Marcy knows what's going on between them, and that's why she's like pushing his buttons here, right? Because she saw that weird. I mean, she saw that weird thing where
she knows there's something weird, but it's like, no, I feel like everything is just like, is there something weird? Oh, no, it's not. It's just, you know, it's in my head. It's alleviated. Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of the charm of the show. So,
Did strike me in this scene. Maybe I just hadn't realized it up to this point, but, Charlie, and really it's probably just the bald thing, but Charlie is straight up, he looks like Dr. Evil, man. If they need somebody to play Dr. Evil in a remake of Austin Powers, because, you know, Mike Myers won't remake it, it's Charlie for sure.
No, we're remaking Californication. No.
That's fine.
No other roles. Yeah.
Sure. Well, they might be remaking. You just sent me a
series. Yeah, shout out. This is the tweets. Like, David Duchovny, like, was doing some mass stuff, and then. Damn it, what's wrong?
Evan Handler?
Evan Handler, yeah.
Yeah.
He just, you know, tweeted back, and I tweeted back. I'm like, hey, please notice me. I got this podcast coming.
Did they respond? Did you really tweet that at them? Oh, okay.
I didn't tweet the podcast. I said,
dude, we should get both of them on our podcast. We should interview them.
I wish, but I tweeted something witty. It's whatever. I'd like to think it's
Listen,
witty.
So you guys, if you tune into the next episode, we're going to be interviewing David Duchovny, Evan Handler, and you know, Natasha McElhenney, and they're all going to be we're going to have them all zoomed up. It's going to be so the next episode is going to be the Californication reunion. There's going to be like six of them right here. We will not be getting the actress that plays Becca because I refuse to let her on the show.
Anyway,
what you guys don't know is Wayne is raging inside right now. Like, it's so difficult for Wayne to even continue. He just had to, like, fake cough because he's just, like, trying to clear his head and go because he's incensed.
Pissed. Runkle can't get his dream scenario or just can't go through with it. Runkle's like, pick someone else.
Yeah.
Pick Karen. Marcy's like, what? Karen,
man, what? Yeah, what the, come on, man. This guy, you know, he's already made that awkward comment about watching Karen breastfeed. Like, I guess this is where his head's at.
Well, just like, I kind of knew. I mean, it's just like the rational, like, drama name to bring. Like, I remember watching it the first time, and this time, like, does he mention Karen? And it's like, oh, yeah, he mentions Karen. And then Marcy has a good line. It's like, I don't want to go where Hank's been.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was amazing. She said Hank left booby traps like the Viet Cong. And you know what's crazy? You know what's crazy?
Is, a thing called love?
You know you actually do. People are going to think I'm making this. A thing called love is very crazy, right? But God definitely hates us all.
Yeah.
You actually do leave booby traps after you sleep with somebody if you ejaculate. Sperm leaved residue, which is called, they're called transposons. If a woman sleeps with multiple men in one day or within like a 24 to 48 hour period, what happens is you do not just get genetics from the sperm that actually is, you know how like the sperm, there's like a million sperm that get released, right? And you know, they all try to get to the egg, right? On almost most of the time, all of them die, right? Every once in a while, one gets there, you know, and then, you know, you have like a baby, right? Yeah. Like some kind of super champion sperm. Right? And, but it turns out you actually get bits and pieces of genetics from other sperm that are around that actually don't get to be the guys that inseminate the egg. They're called transposons. This is fairly recent stuff. It's really, really wild. The really wild part of it is that you can get transposons from sperm that are not even from the same guy who's impregnating the egg. And there's actually some discussion about certain sperm that maybe leave transposons in the reproductive tract to be discovered later on, and so actually to become parts. So you can actually get parts of your genetic material from people who are not your own dad. How wild is that?
Wow. That's like a lot of sci-fi.
So it turns out you really can leave booby traps up in there. I'm just saying, you know? Yeah. It's pretty wild, right? I don't think it's weird because this stuff, it's actually really, really, they're called transposons. You can look it up. I don't want to exaggerate the importance of them because saying there's definitely not, it's not clear that that they can like leave data around that can then be, you know, kind of like re-upped like at a much later date. But it is pretty clear that they can kick around for like 24 to 48 hours for sure. That stuff is really happening. And whenever, like, I remember, I was telling that, I forget why we were discussing it, you know, I'm a creeper teacher, but like, I was discussing with one of my classes one time and like, nobody believed me. Like, they didn't even believe me. And I was like, I'm not making this up. Like, it's a real thing. Like, it's a known thing. Like, they're like, no, you're not telling. I'm like, yes, I'm telling the truth. They're like, that's crazy. I'm like, yes, it is crazy. It really is. So she's not wrong. There are booby traps up there. There's Hank booby traps. There's Bill booby traps. There's some other booby traps.
There's Karen booby traps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Marcy's like, I want that one. I want.
Yeah. Danny, oh, can I just say the Prim Reaper is an amazing name for nickname for Karen. Hmm. Like, I really feel like we should adopt that as Karen's nickname. The Prim Reaper is fantastic. But yeah, she says Danny looks like she knows things. Yeah, she definitely looks like she knows things. So she knows maybe more than Marcy wishes that she knew.
So Karen's now at Todd Carr's house to do some architecture job, and Karen's like, wow, this is amazing. You know, Hank's like, so basically Hank hooked up Karen to get an architecture job at Todd Carr's house. And
Yeah,
because that always happens in real life.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You have to understand, right? The thing that's just bewildering to me is why would Carr even be kind to somebody associated with Hank? Here's what I was thinking, okay? What I'd be thinking is Carr's trying to hit that, which who can really blame him?
Not only that, there's a little scene there that's less, like, a little bit, you know.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I'm on Team Carr on this one, man. I think I might just be on Team Carr in general, but yeah, I'm with him on this one. Like, he's, it's fair game, fair play, man. And you know, Hank did something that was way worse anyways. Like, Karen's not together with Hank anymore. Although it's you know, very disrespectful to Bill to chase after Karen, you know, from Carr's position. But then again, you know, Karen is who she is. She already ran off with one guy, so she's fair game at that point. But yeah, the house is, you know, this is a house. This house is a really nice house. Hey, so I want to ask you a question. Hank asks Carr how much he paid for the house, right?
Yeah.
What would you guess this house is worth?
It depends
I
what
guess I gotta
year
tell you location.
too.
It's in Brentwood. It's in Brentwood.
Okay, but like the year 2007?
No, right now. Right now.
Right now, probably 3 million.
10.5 million
Yeah,
is how much
easy.
the house is worth according to Zillow. Now, that data is a little bit iffy because the house has never been sold. It is a Ray Cappy house. It was commissioned by a psychologist named Esther Benton, who still lives there. She was a single mother living with a daughter, and she commissioned the house for them.
It's a nice
And
name, Esther.
yeah, it's my grandma's name too, although I
Three
think
of a
you're
kind,
referencing somebody
three
else.
set of
Yeah.
Esters, yeah.
Yeah. Foursome. So the house itself, right? Ray Cappy is a, he's kind of like a successor to Frank Lloyd Wright. He really believes in, making things work with the environment, and you can see that in the house and the way it's kind of set up to blend in with the scenery. But this house has actually been used in a lot of different movies and TV shows. So it's there's a show there's a movie called 1 Hour Photo, which is like kind of a horror movie with Robin Williams where he's like stalking a family. Do you know this movie?
No.
Okay, so they actually it's in there, and he actually goes into the house, and some of the movie is, he goes into the house and he looks through all of their things and such while they're out of town, kind of like the Golden State Killer used to do, but then, he would return and kill you, or whatever. And but it was used there, and then it's also in it was in an episode of Beverly Hills 90210. It was used as, the movie Cruel Intentions.
Yes.
So
Ryan
even
Phillippe
though
and Reese Witherspoon.
exactly, right? Your second favorite movie. And even though that took place on Long Island, this house was
They have good
the
iced tea.
house. What?
They have good iced tea.
Is,
Long Island.
yeah, that's what
That's
I've
a line in
heard.
the movie.
No, it's better than other iced teas for sure, because it's got the right stuff in it. But yeah, I actually thought I weirdly didn't hear you, and I thought you were saying that iced tea was in the movie, and I was just going to be blown away. If iced tea, I have not seen Cruel Intentions, but if iced tea was in that movie,
I
first of
have.
all, this is a remake that needs to happen. Cruel Intentions needs
It
to
already
be
got
remade.
remade. It's terrible.
Okay, but is the iced tea has the iced tea version come out yet? Okay, I
The
need to
guy's
see iced
really
tea.
active on Twitter, Ice T.
Yeah, I believe it. He's a solid dude. Listen, I've liked Ice T ever since that song Cop Killer came out, which you never hear anymore. But
Your
I'm a
grandma
fan.
doesn't like that song.
No, my grandma loves the Police. My grandma does not love me. She loves the Police. I love Ice T, not my grandma, so it works out.
So this house is also mentioned very fondly in a really hot podcast, the Californication 2020 podcast.
That is one of the best podcasts I've heard, actually. I'm not sure of the names of the guys who run it, but that's a good podcast. And my favorite one was the one where they had the Californication reunion with all the actors and actresses.
So Hank's like, yeah, let's all celebrate. Hank, Karen, Becca, and spit some lines, and then Hank's like, hey, he reminds her, I know your dreams, I know your dreams. And then Karen was like all excited, hugs Todd Carr. Todd Carr's like, oh yeah.
For sure. It's like, I like this. I like
Yeah.
that. Such a creeper. But
Hank started
girl gives you a hug. You gotta do what you gotta do. Take your chances when they come.
Runkle and Marcy argue that they
Hold on,
should.
hold on. There is. Can we go back before we go on to
Yeah,
the next scene? There was a line that was like, "It will be like old times," right? And then the response is, "But which ones?" And
Ooh.
that's like, man, because this is a show about nostalgia,
Yeah.
right? And this is a show about going back to the past, right? And getting stuck in your past or trying to relive your past, and moving on and things like that. And that's a it's a really fair question, because the way we remember things, right? Like, we have this really kind thing that our brains do, which is over time it kind of represses the bad memories and just remembers the good, and we'll go back and like recolor a bunch of memories that weren't that great as like good memories and things like that. And so that can be both good and bad. It partly explains why people will get back together sometimes like years later, because they remember all the good things about it and they forget all of the pain and the bad times about it. But it is a really good question, right? Because people are always saying, like, we want it to be like old times, right? Make America great again. We want to go back to the past, right? Well, what past, right? There's all different paths that are taking place simultaneously at once, right? And there's all different kinds of interpretations taking place simultaneously. And which ones are you going back to is a really good question. And it's a question the show is asking, right? I mean, this, the show is asking it in this cycle of like, will they, won't they get back together, right? Things like that. It's asking, what will it look like if they get back together, right? And there's also the question of, what really were the old times anyways? Were they actually all that great? I don't know. You know, it depends.
Less competitive for sure.
Yeah. Then we go on to the next scene, right, which I'll let you take over. But I will say, I'm a real sucker for shows that, like, splice, use as the, you might know the technical word for this in filmmaking, but, like, the splice scenes that they use in between scenes, I'm a real sucker for a show that uses Southern California, man. Because, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, and, you know, I just have such a positive association with Southern California, because this is really where I feel like I grew up and became an adult. And, you know, I have, you know, like, the old times for me, like, all of my memories of California are super positive. You know, you grew up here, so you probably, you know, hate this place.
No, I mean,
yeah,
really, well, really tangent. Yeah,
you don't realize how good you have it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely,
I mean,
true.
You didn't grow up in Southern California, to be fair.
So. Yeah, but I mean, probably just even these decades, like, I realized growing up in Northern California, settling down in Southern California, going to UCSD and in San Diego, it's, you know, it's, California is a really nice place, and I definitely was lucky to, you know, grow up, spend my life here, but at the same time, traveling to other places, I do appreciate it. And when people are like, don't you like traveling? I'm like, no. I just want to stay in California. I like this place.
That's how Hank feels about New York, you know, but yeah, he feels out of place here, but yeah, I get it. I understand.
I've been to New York a few times. I'm definitely California. Like, one of the things that I say about New York is, if you're a morning person, the sun rises in New York, so you just get up early. In California, you like the sunsets and you like the nocturnal life. So
yeah, although they say that New York is the city that never sleeps. So, and closing time is
4:30.
Closing time, I think, is 4 a.m., right,
4
in New York?
Yeah.
I think
last
so.
Last call. Yeah.
Yeah. So here it's 2, but see, that, I mean, there's a big, an understandable reason for that, which is, you know, the whole driving thing here. I mean, everybody drives everywhere they go. The great thing about drinking in New York is you don't have to endanger anybody's life. I mean, you know, I
1:30 last call. I can't last in the 4 a.m. There's a couple times in my life I'm just like, oh, it's last call. And now I'm just like, 1:30 is good. I'm like waiting.
Yeah.
I'm like, is it 1:30 yet?
No, this is what happens when you get old, right? You just rather go home and just, like, you know, watch an episode of Californication and drink a scotch, you know, like, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, or an absinthe. Mm. So, yeah. So, shout out to absinthe.
Shout out to absinthe. Runkle and Marcy argue they shouldn't go through with this. Runkle's like, you know, what if we aren't the same after? Marcy's like we're supposed to be changing, so, you know, we aren't the same.
Yeah. And I mean, Runkle's the one who's introduced this, right? He's pretty frustrated. I mean, you know, we've given Marcy some credit, but she definitely noticed things were wrong, and she tried to take it upon herself to fix them. You know, I mean, I don't think she's gone through maybe as well as she can, but look how, I mean, she definitely is making an effort here. And yeah. Then Charlie says, like, what problem? There's no problem. And, like, he's lying. Like, there's obviously a big problem, and he's the one who created the problem here, you know, and his wife's been pretty good about, you know, trying to fix whatever's going on between them, but it can't be fixed because, you know, his head got turned. And you know, listen, once your head gets turned, it's honestly, in anything in life, once your head gets turned by a new job, your head gets turned by a new girl, like, your head gets turned by a new place to live, like, it's tough. It's really tough to roll that stuff back once it happens. Maybe some people have better impulse control than I do.
Esther, he has no impulse control. I swear by the moon and stars in the sky. Hank is at his place and he has this five cheese monstrosity, and Mia call, or he call, he gets a call and he thinks it's Karen. She's like, oh, I'll be right over. And it's like, Mia, what? She's like, you're in trouble? No. And this was a foreshadow in the last episode when,
right.
You know, the, you know, you're going to cry wolf or whatever.
Yeah. 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 So he's just not buying it anymore. Although, I mean, she was in a kind of bad spot last time that seemed to get downplayed inexplicably. So, sure. But yeah, he's just not, he can't be on speed dial for me all the time. So, you know, and there is a boy who cried wolf type situation to this, right? Which is, you know, if she is really in trouble, look, if the thing is, when you create drama, when you constantly tell people you're in trouble, when your threshold for telling them in trouble is so low and or is just a straight up lie, right, to get their attention, this is what happens. Like, people aren't going to help you out. Like, I was talking to my friend the other day, you know, and he was telling me, like, you know, one of his friends, you know, called him and, like, asked him for some money. And, you know, like, there for a number of reasons, he couldn't do it because of who this friend was. But the thing is, this same guy, if I called him tomorrow, right, and I said, listen, man, I can't really answer anything about it right now, but I need you to, like, send me, like, $5,000. He would totally do it, right? He would totally do it because he knows I would never, ever do this. And if I called him and asked him for $5,000, he knows that he doesn't need to even know the reason. He knows there must be a good reason. And he, so it's like, but when you're Mia, right, if you call people and you know, this is what's going to happen.
Like, it's real.
Yeah. Mia's out of her mind. She really is. Mia has some kind of personality disorder. She needs to see a shrink immediately.
She's a character. She's Mia's with the teacher, the, you know, teacher with this fleshy TA. And back at Runkle's.
This guy's just, he's beyond the pale.
Yeah. Back at Runkle's, Marcy and Danny are... They're arguing how the threesome's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm. And, Danny takes charge. Very nice, yeah. Danny. Yeah.
It's, yeah. And then, you know.
Great line in the scene. You know, Danny tells Charlie, like, so they're saying, like, is it supposed to be this way? Right? And she says, it's a fantasy. It's not supposed to be.
At all.
And I was like, oh, damn. Like, that's like a, I don't even know if the line was intended to be that way, but I was like, man, that's just putting it right out there. Like, this shouldn't be happening, right? Like, you're not supposed to actually be doing this, people. But you know, Danny, she's in the mix. She's doing it. Yeah. So then we go back to Cheese Sensation.
Hank is with Becca and Karen. Mm-hmm. And Karen's like, I gotta go. Hank, good thing you're here so you can take care of Becca. And Hank's gonna go with Karen, and Becca's pissed, and it's like, why do you have to go? It's just like Mia, she's not blood related. And this is where I definitely agree with Becca. There's so many, I realize it's a TV show, but there's so many alternative things that could have been better decision making.
Okay, hold on a second. I don't agree with you here at all.
You think this was the right
move? I think your general point I agree with. Very bad decision making on Hank's part in many different situations. But in this situation, right? Not only do I not agree with Becca here, I don't even really think that this should be Becca's reaction in the situation. I grant she's just a kid, but Mia, I mean, Becca knows what Mia's up to, right? So Becca should know that Mia could get herself into some real trouble. I think she has to know that Mia's that kind of character, you know, that kind of life, you know, that's what her character is. She could get into some real trouble. And the other thing is, Karen is going to a situation where Mia has said she's in trouble. It seems to me to just make sense that Hank would go along with her. Like, I don't see why you would send Karen into the lion's den alone.
That's fine, so, but Becca can come with them too.
Yeah, you want to bring, like, Becca to a potentially dangerous situation? I don't know. I guess you're right, I just
really fell for Becca's line. And, like, remember in episode one, like, Mia was the one that called the parents to get Becca out of trouble. I don't know, it's, there's, like, I don't know, some,
but here's the thing, do you think Mia's, like, Mia's line about this, she's not even a blood relative, like, that's not super Becca's compelling line. To me Becca's, yeah, sorry, I'm sorry, yeah. Becca's line, that's not super compelling to me. I mean, Karen is her de facto stepmom, right? So Karen has to deal with it. And then so basically...
Oh, no, but it was the Hank leaving. Like, Becca's right. Talking about, it's like, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, listen, if I'm in Hank's spot, I probably go with Karen. I go with Karen. Remember, Hank, the thing is, Becca doesn't know this, but Hank has already turned down this situation once.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's not go. He's not actually going. He did make the decision to go to Becca's, but the reason he goes now is because Karen's going. You know, and
that's fair.
That's fair. It's one. The thing is, like, here's the thing, and I think this is going to come up more at the end of the episode, but it's like, it's not even. You can have a series of fairly justifiable decisions that nonetheless, when looked at, you know, cumulatively, is an indication that you're not making the overall right decision as far as priorities, right? So that's something that I think we can, well, let's stay tuned, right? Stay tuned. We've got that coming before the end of the episode, and then we're gonna have a special word from the show creator Tom Capinos, who will be appearing to talk with us.
So back at the threesome, chains are coming out, nipple clamps, and that was attached. So nipple clamp goes on Runkle, and this, I gotta admit, was hilarious. Yeah. And then
Marcy, you want me to go? You want me to go get my box and do a show and tell right now? No.
Sure. Called your bluff. No bluff.
I'll do it. I mean, I don't know if some of the stuff I'm not sure I can put out there, but some of it is no big deal.
Audience, press one or leave a comment if you think that he's bluffing, or press or leave a comment, or press two if you think he really has some kinky stuff, and we'll find out in a future episode. Anyway, you don't know him like I know him. So Marcy's...
I definitely have some nipple clamps. I've never gotten them to work right. They just seem really shitty. But, you know, I've never ripped off a nipple either, so that's good. I just use them on myself, mostly.
Marcy gets up, and the clamp was attached to her underwear, and then yanks off, and is like, "Oh!" But, you know, obviously this is all done for the great show of Californication.
Yeah, and, no, I mean, it's a good scene. We appreciate Evan Handler's commitment to the show, because what you guys don't know, and we actually talked to him about this before the show to confirm, his nipple actually had to get ripped off in that scene. Like, they were doing a really authentic scene, you know, kind of like Vincent Gallo and the Brown Bunny, and they were just doing the scene like for real, and you know, they had a real actually at our very last episode, we're actually going to be auctioning off Evan Handler's nipple for a charity. So you guys can tune in for that.
We have it in a, you know, preserved jar.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you guys, listen, once you buy it, you can do whatever you want with it. We don't care. But, you know, because the proceeds go to children who've had their nipples ripped off and need them replaced.
So Hank and Karen are at the, you know, teacher. Let me look up the teacher's name. Nick Lowry.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they ever say his name in the show. I love how scripts always have, like, every scrub character's name on them, you know, even when they don't get, like, named in the show. Like, you'll be, like, looking at IMDb for an episode of something, and it'll say, like, somebody played, like, Sue, and you're like, what? Who? And it turns out, like, Sue is just, like, a secretary who had, like, three lines in the show, and you're like, how does that character have a name? Like, sometimes they don't, right? Sometimes, like, secretary number one. But sometimes they have, like, full names, like Nick Lowry, which I don't think his name's ever, maybe he comes up later, who knows. But